with Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Oh, I despise, I love, I hate Britney Spears. Why we're rejoining the Drive Home at 5 with yours truly, Curtis Lewa, with Britney, I have no idea. But push on, we will. As you heard our traffic guy, Jeff, is talking about major demonstrations at the Rutgers University campus, the Scarlet Knights against Trump. There were more demonstrations outside of the Trump Tower today, a continuation since it was announced that he was the president of the United States. It was also a day where Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, not mine, because I didn't vote for him, schlepped up to the Trump Tower to give the president-elect a little piece of his mind and tell him how he would do everything to thwart him locally if, in fact, he tried to initiate any of his proposals, especially when it came to undocumented, a.k.a. illegal aliens. But there is a larger movement out there involving a number of Democrats, liberals, and progressives who have already dug their heels in. And they are not following the wishes of the outgoing president, Barack Obama, who said, wait a second, calm down. I know Donald Trump, and he's no ideologue.
I also think that he is coming to this office with fewer set, hard and fast policy prescriptions than a lot of other presidents might be arriving with. I don't think he is ideological. I think ultimately he's pragmatic in that way. That can serve him well, as long as he's got good people around him and he has a clear sense of direction.
On the line to discuss it, Bill Press, host of the nationally syndicated Bill Press Show and the author of Buyer's Remorse, How Obama Let Progressives Down. Thanks for jumping on board on the Drive Home at 5, Bill.
Hey, Curtis, I haven't talked to you in a while. Good to catch up with you, man.
Yeah, no, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
But I understand, Bill, you and some others out there have dug in your heels, and unlike what Hillary asked and President Barack Obama asked, that you give Donald Trump a chance, you're having none of that, right?
No, I'm not leading any movement, but certainly in my comments on CNN and on my own show, look, I think Obama's wussing out here, to tell the truth, Curtis, and whatever you think, agree or disagree, it's hard to see that a guy, mainly President Obama, who in 1 week time went from running around the country saying Donald Trump, his election would be the end of Western civilization as we know it, right? I mean, he was way out there, right? To now saying, well, he's no ideologue, he's a pragmatic person, and we'll be just fine. I mean, I find that hard to square. But, you know, here's my belief. President Obama and Hillary Clinton said, we have to accept the results of the election. Donald Trump will be the next president, and we have to hope that he succeeds. Now, I'll go along with part of that. I don't dispute the results of the election. He will be my next president. I accept him as that. I accept the will of the people. But I don't want him to succeed at what he said he would do as president. I don't want him to repeal Roe v. Wade, to drop the Paris Climate Accords, to scuttle all those EPA regs on new coal plants. I mean, go down the list to deport 11, 12 million people to have a religious test for Muslims coming into this country. First of all, I find that very ideological, and no, I don't want that to happen.
But Bill Press, if you notice, Donald Trump, president-elect, has been vacillating. He has been retreating on some of those core issues. And if the president, who sat with him for an hour and a half, is saying, hey, look, it's all part of the campaign, the heated rhetoric, this guy is no hardcore ideologue. We're not talking Barry Goldwater here. We're not talking Ronald Reagan here. We're talking a guy who's pragmatic. Remember, Bill, this was a guy years ago who was as liberal and progressive in New York as you could get, Donald Trump. And maybe he just morphed into this because he saw this as an avenue to the presidency.
Yeah, well, first of all, I just got to say, you know, Ronald Reagan was a pragmatic president. He's got the reputation among Republicans today as being this hardliner who never compromised on everything. That's crazy. I mean, I remember I was in Sacramento when Ronald Reagan was governor of California. I mean, he passed the biggest tax increase in California history in a deal with Democrats there. And even in the White House, you know, remember he made deals with the Russians. Reagan was a very pragmatic politician. But what you say is true about Donald Trump in the sense that I don't think we really know, and Obama doesn't really know. Yeah, Trump is now saying, well, maybe I'll just deport 2 or 3 million. But, like, who knows? He says, well, we're not going to build a total fence, maybe a wall, maybe part of it will be a fence again. Who the hell knows? I will admit there's a lot about Donald Trump we don't recognize. And what you point out is why a lot of Republicans couldn't support him in the primary or in the general because they didn't think he was a real Republican.
Well, you reminded me when we went back in the time machine to the time of Ronald Reagan, the governor of California, that as you had mentioned, how Trump wants to roll back Roe v. Wade and leave it up to the states, that same governor, Ronald Reagan, signed in the abortion law in California.
Yes, indeed, right, indeed he did.
Okay, so now, if in fact they are
saying, here's what I'm saying. I'm taking Donald Trump at his word during his campaign. Now, I know no politician can deliver half of what they promise. Those things that he said he wanted to do, I don't want him to succeed at those. If he wants to come up with a great plan like he talked about for jobs and rebuilding our infrastructure, which God knows we need, right, like that new tunnel, that tunnel between Jersey and New York, and creating millions of jobs, absolutely, right on. I support him 1,000%.
All right, but he, obviously, that's his strong point. That's his sweet spot as the builder. You would think that would command most of his focus. But for instance,
I would hope so. And I would hope so. And getting rid of those trade deals, which have cost millions of jobs in this country, I think Donald Trump is absolutely on that, right on.
Okay, so there's some room here to maneuver here for a new Trump presidency. Now, of late, Rudy Giuliani is in the spotlight. He was passed on to become the next attorney general, but it seems he's in the lead to become Secretary of State to represent ourselves geopolitically for the Trump administration. Now, you remember Rudy in New York. He was very moderate. He was pro-gun control. He was pro-choice, pro-gay and lesbian marriage. Is that a Rudy that you could live with?
You know Rudy better than I do, Curtis. I've never worked under him. I'm not a big fan of his. I don't know what he brings to. I admit I thought he was a good governor of New York, a good mayor of New York. Okay, from what I saw, and he certainly rose to the occasion September 11th. Secretary of State. I don't know what the hell he brings to that table other than tons of conflicts of interest because he's done business deals and represented foreign countries, so many of them, but through his legitimate business, right? How can he take those conflicts, get rid of those conflicts, and become Secretary of State? In the end, I don't think he's going to get that job, neither Attorney General nor Secretary.
Now, did it bother you, though, when Hillary was commingling both her responsibilities as Secretary of State and her, obviously, connection to Bill Clinton's Clinton Initiative and Foundation?
Actually, if you go back and listen to the tapes of my show, you'll find out that I was very critical of that, which I thought was,
well, that's good. That's
was
good.
Pay to play. But I'll tell you one thing. I blame Bill on that more than Hillary. But, I think they promised Obama they'd build the firewall right between the two, the foundation and Secretary of State's office. And we know from those WikiLeaks emails that did not exist. And I think that was a disgrace.
And then finally, Bill Press, the most controversial of the Trump appointments to date, is Steve Bannon, who will be his key consigliere, with equal status to the chief of staff, Rivas. What is your feeling about Bannon?
My feeling is that this guy does not deserve. First of all, I again will give the president and the president-elect the right to appoint anybody he wants to his administration. That comes with the territory. But this is a guy, Bannon, that I don't believe deserves to be within 100 miles of the Oval Office of the United States.
Would you say
that based on what he has said, how he describes himself, and what he has written on that website, Breitbart News.
All right, but Bill,
anti-American, I believe.
Doesn't he sort of remind you of a modern day Pat Buchanan?
No, no. I do know Pat Buchanan. Pat Buchanan's a friend of mine. Steve Bannon is no Pat Buchanan.
And yet, you remember, Pat Buchanan was accused of many of the same attributes, both when he was with the Reagan administration and then when he ran against Bush 41 and primaried him.
I'm telling, again, you know, I debated Pat Buchanan for 6 years.
Oh, I know, I know, yes.
Sat across the table from him. You know, Pat has said a lot of stuff that I really disagreed with. You know, but Pat is ultimately a good person with good, solid values. From what I can see, Steve Bannon is not. I think I don't want to go into all the name calling. You know, people just look it up. Look it up. Look up the headlines. Well, look up the articles. I think you'll see this guy does not represent what we Americans stand for.
I do appreciate your honesty, Bill Press, host of the nationally syndicated Bill Press Show and the author of Buyer's Remorse, How Obama Let Progressives Down. Next, what Donald Trump has to do to try to heal this nation.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
Guardian Angel founder Curtis Sliwa.
WABCRadio.com.
On a day in which Ken Duffy told us the rabble-rousers, the Scarlet Knights, on the campus of Rutgers University are protesting the Trump presidency. There are continued demonstrations outside of Trump Tower in Manhattan. And there are a number of clashes and acts of vandalism that occurred all over the country. On the line, once again, is S.E. Cupp, New York Daily News columnist and a regular CNN contributor. Thanks for joining us on the Drive Home at 5, S.E.
Sure, Curtis, anytime.
And I was reading your column in New York's hometown newspaper, The Daily News, earlier today, in which you were suggesting the speech that President-elect Donald Trump needs to give to the country. What can he say to try to heal these divisions?
Well, first, I'm sure you agree, you know, these violent outbursts and acts of vandalism are completely unacceptable. And I would be saying the same thing if you know, Trump supporters were behaving this way after a Hillary election. So that has to stop. But the problem is there's so much fear and anxiety and tension around. I know I spoke to a group of liberals in New York City last night, and they were despondent. But the thing that President-elect Trump has to do is address that. I think he's ignoring it, imagining it will just kind of simmer down as these things tend to do. And I just think that's going to make it worse. So what I wrote in the Daily News column was that he has to explicitly say that he believes legal immigration is a good thing, that diversity isn't a bad word, that you know, people from different countries aren't to be feared. I think he has to deliver that message and rebuke the white nationalism that sort of is underpinning some of his support to make the first step toward bridging this huge divide now between Trump and like half the country.
I know, but S.E. Cupp, there's a cottage industry out there who want to do everything they can in their power to make sure that Donald Trump does not become a successful president of the United States. It's given them a cause now, demonstration de jure. All of a sudden, young people, millennials, hipsters, Black Lives Matter, other groups, radical or less radical, they now have a focus to be able to come into the streets each day and protest this president. What makes you think that anything he says will assuage them?
I think for some, you're absolutely right. That, you know, this will become a full-time job for a lot of people because they think that Trump is that bad and that sort of deleterious for the country. But I think for others who are just genuinely concerned by, you know, reports that he is going to reinstate a Muslim registry for incoming Muslims, I think they're really just concerned. And I think if he did have that conversation, whether in a speech or in an interview, I think it really would allay some of the fears. And a lot of people would just kind of go back to their daily lives. And I think just in general, it's important that he do that to set a proper tone and to be on record about some of those issues.
Well, I remember during the Nixon years, his hatchet guy was the guy he chose to be his vice president, Spiro Agnew from Maryland, who talked about the silent majority and obviously fighting back. That was a pretty common theme during the 18 months of Trump's campaign. It may be difficult for him to be the messenger of that. Are there any particular appointments or things that he can do to show that he is turning a leaf or at least moderating some of those positions?
Well, in some ways, his first decision really didn't go over too well. Appointing Steve Bannon as a chief strategist, I think, worried a lot of people on the left and the right. So I'm not really sure that his next appointments can really alleviate some of those fears, when his first one, I think, set a pretty chilling tone. Now, that said, there are some good moderate Republicans that he would do well to empower. Unfortunately, some of them have already left. Mike Rogers is a good friend of mine and has a show at CNN where I work, and was a former congressman from Michigan. He was brought in on the transition team, and he was just muscled out. So, Trump's surrounding himself with lots of different people with lots of different interests, from family interests, business interests, people who just want to be rewarded for their loyalty, Republicans in Congress who want to steer him in a straight direction. And so it's really, I'm sure, difficult internally inside of that scrum to figure out, which way he's going, because there's just a lot of people in his ear.
All right, very quickly, S.E. Cup, should this speech be given by the president-elect Donald Trump or after he is sworn into office?
I think the sooner the better, Curtis, honestly. I mean, I think there's no better time than right now, when people are in the streets and really upset and angry and frustrated and scared. So why put it off?
Do appreciate that, S.E. Cup, New York Daily News columnist and CNN contributor. Up next, you remember Joe Colombo? Oh, I grew up with him. I remember he had the real estate office. I remember he was on with Bob Grant, who was the king of talk radio right here. He was on with David Susskind. He was on with so many talk show hosts because he was quite eloquent. But now there's a book that suggests that his murder is unsolved. There was a black guy pretending to be a photographer who iced him, and then he got iced by 50 guys pointing guns at him at the annual Italian-American Day presentation in Columbus Circle. Time 40. I remember it like it was yesterday. It was opposite the Bamboo Lounge on Avenue M, Rockaway Parkway in Canarsie. Yes, of Goodfellas fame, it was actually in Canarsie. A Lucchese hangout, Paul Liverio, the other guys. And my cousins were telling me, oh, man, you know what happened today down at 59th Street Columbus Circle at the annual Italian-American Day gathering? Joe Colombo got shot by this, as they use the term, a Moulinian, a black guy pretending to be a photographer. And then all of a sudden his henchmen pulled out their guns and fired and killed this guy. And I thought that was the answer to what took place, eventually causing Joe Colombo to die many years later as he was on life support. But Don Capria, in a new book, Colombo, calls it the unsolved murder. Don, welcome to the Drive Home at 5, but why do you say it's an unsolved murder?
The case never made one arrest. So Chief of Detective Albert Seidman had to do an investigation, and I agree with your point that Jerome Johnson was the shooter of Joe Colombo. I just couldn't come to agree that was it. This guy was a lone gunman. He wanted to kill Joe Colombo, marched into Columbus Circle, got press credentials, rented a Bolex camera, had a handgun that was supposedly untraceable, shot Joe Colombo, suicide mission, and that's it.
But we were told, at least the word in the street was, that this was an assignment that was taken on by Joey Blass Gallo and his crew, and they convinced the black guy to be the jihadist, so to speak, because he was going to get shot up. In your research, any direct links to Joey Blass Gallo?
I don't have Joe Gallo's, he was shot 9 months later. Kid Blast is still alive, the youngest of the Gallo brothers. Larry Gallo passed before this shooting. No direct link to them, but to people that knew them, President Street and Red Hook guys. And one person told me that even for Gallo, that's a suicide mission. If Gallo, and I'm not going to say that Gallo wasn't looking to harm Joe Colombo, because it was the word on the street that when he came home from prison, he was vying for power. He had a problem with Colombo. He had a problem with the league. He had a problem in Brooklyn, and he wanted to make some noise. And his intentions were to go around and mess with people that were supporting the league and try to disrupt this rally. But for Gallo to go in and shoot him unsanctioned, as we know it would be an unsanctioned commission hit, five families, this would lead to Gallo's death. So for Gallo, that also is a suicide mission. Printed in a book called The Fifth Family, Gallo's bodyguard, he wrote about this as well, that they were just as shocked when the murder happened in their hangouts as anyone on the street. So it was not even the word on the street belief. I think that was the popular belief. That was like John Q. Public and the media and Seidman really were strongly believing that this was Gallo that hired Jerome Johnson to go in there and kill him. But if you look at a little bit more information, Daniel P. Holman, who was the FBI director for the Organized Crime Task Force, he disagreed with Seidman and said that, no, we don't believe that this was a mob-sanctioned hit. This is unlike any other mob-sanctioned hit, to put a lone gunman from outside of the families, an untrained person with a gun in front of 15, 20,000 people waving it to kill Colombo. So there's a lot of problems that you have with the John Q. Public story that I couldn't agree with, and that's one of the reasons why I wanted to write and research the book.
Well, in fact, your book, it's very long, a lot of details. It goes through the history of Joe Colombo, his activities. He was well-known to talk radio, talk TV. He was very eloquent at the time. So what do you think was behind his execution?
You know, I did a lot of research on this thing, and I've looked into COINTELPRO. I don't know if you're familiar with
the... Oh, very familiar.
So, you know, when I started studying and what Hoover was doing, the dirty tricks and the black op stuff and what they had against the Panthers and any political dissident group, I started more and more to find things that lined up to believe that this could have been an FBI, CIA conspiracy to get rid of someone who was very charismatic, who, if we were to take a leader that's out here right now today, Donald Trump. People are looking at Donald Trump as a leader, but the status quo does not want him to be the leader. Well, Joe Colombo in 1970 and 71 marched 1970, 200,000 people into Columbus Circle. Lady Gaga could not do that right now. So you had someone that was gaining so much momentum and political power in New York City and beyond. The government had to look at this. I mean, he put John Mitchell on his knees and made him go on public television to say they would never use the words mafia and La Cosa Nostra in government rhetoric again.
I would highly refer this book to all of you out there who follow organized crime and its history, as I have done. It's called Colombo, The Unsolved Murder by Don Capria. How can people get the book, Don?
It's available on all digital stores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and beyond.
Well, I can't wait to plunge into the rest of the book because... There's no doubt I follow the exploits of the geriatric espresso-sipping psychotic killers of organized crime with a passion.
Deep connections.
I really think it's free speech.
Deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa, 77 WABC.
Oh, a little old school Sir Mix-a-Lot. Baby Got Back, that's what he was best known for coming out of Seattle. But his second top song was The Posse on Broadway. They would stop at Dick's, the hamburger joint, and then they'd go on their way. Well, on this ride home at 5, it's interesting because the big sports story that has bled into the front of the newspapers is how LeBron James is all upset because Phil Jackson, you know, the Zen master, is doing a horrible job in managing the New York Knicks, unlike when he was coach of the world champion Chicago Bulls and the L.A. Lakers, because he referred to LeBron James as being a diva, of which he is, and that he rolls strong with a posse, which involves his management, his handlers, and his crew. And this is what LeBron James, Cleveland Cavalier, had to say.
To use that label, and if you go and read the definition of what the word posse is, it's not what I've built over my career. It's not what I stand for. It's not what my family stands for. And I believe the only reason he used that word is to see young African-Americans trying to make a difference.
African-American trying to make a difference of all things. You know, I understand LeBron James. You stood on the stage with Hillary Rodham Clinton, and you couldn't even deliver your home state of Ohio. You and Jay-Z, back-to-back, belly-to-belly, huge public gatherings. You couldn't deliver Ohio in the win column for Hillary. So now all of a sudden, everything has a racist tinge to it. Well, let me remind everyone out there that in the aftermath of the Cleveland Cavaliers winning the NBA championship, basking in the thrill of victory, not the agony of defeat, this was the role model LeBron James speaking to the adoring Cleveland public.
I've seen a lot of things when there's like LeBron James makes six straight finals appearances. Well, James Jones made six straight as well.
And I swear, it looked like I seen like the biggest human being I've ever seen in my life. I looked at Griff, he said, he's a big I said, absolutely.
So he was kicking the F-bomb along with the other Cleveland Cavaliers, big grins on their face. Yeah, yeah, great role model, LeBron James. Great family guy, great role model. And then you were given tactical air support by the chucker of all chuckers, Carmelo Anthony, number 7 of the New York Knicks. They'll never win a world championship as long as he's on the team. Who all of a sudden started attacking Phil Jackson because he referred to LeBron James as being a diva, which everybody knows he is, and for rolling strong with a posse. And I'm saying to myself, wait a second. Hey, Carmelo, why don't you pay attention? Why don't you pay attention to playing basketball, of which you're doing a lousy job of late for the New York Knicks? You're certainly not a great leader. And recently in your own ESPN magazine interview, when you were asked about Baltimore, your hometown, Body Bag City, and you asked, why are they burning down their own neighborhoods? Talking about the brothers and the sisters. Carmelo, you said this. That's right. We don't own anything. That Rite Aid? That drugstore? That isn't ours. And that's what I'm talking about when I say it's all part of something bigger. These times, they're crazy. It's not about the one thing. The system is broken. You hear people saying justice or else. I think you're starting to see what or else looks like. Oh, and now all of a sudden he's an adherent to Black Lives Matter. And remember, it was the same Carmelo Anthony who 10 years ago, when he played for the Denver Nuggets, was in that famous, infamous video that went viral out of the streets of Baltimore with his homies when he was pouring 40s and wearing the red rag of the Bloods when they did the No Snitch video. And they all sang in chorus, snitches get stitches and end up in ditches. Yeah, great role model, Carmelo Anthony. Now, I was never a big fan of Phil Jackson, even when the Knicks, my favorite team, won the world championship in 73. I hated Dollar Bill Bradley. I hated Phil Jackson. I love Cassie Russell. I love Dave DeBusschere. But this guy not only left the NBA, but he worked his way up the hard way. I remember it was like 1985. I was in Washington Avenue in the heart of Albany in upstate New York. And Phil Jackson in this like hippie bus almost hit me as I was crossing the street. I was ready to flip him the bird. And then I realized it's Phil Jackson. How could you miss him? He's like 6'9", 7 foot, all gangly, sort of geeky. And he was driving his Albany Patroons to their CBA game. They played in the Armory there on Washington Avenue. And in fact, he used to do everything. He worked the hard way. So he would not only scout for the team, he was the traveling secretary, a parent surrogate, the driver of the team van, occasionally from Albany to Bangor, Maine. And Phil used to say, hey, the reason I drive the bus or the van is there's more leg room in the driver's seat. This is the Zen master, Phil Jackson, who likes to smoke doobs. He has more in common with Cheech and Chong than he does with Donald Trump or any white supremacist. So, hey, guess what, LeBron James, diva man, and Carmelo Anthony, chucker, superior, extreme for the New York Knicks, take a chill pill and leave the Zen master, Phil Jackson, alone.